join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, as you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and tonight we got some special guests on that we're going to chat with. We're going to chat in-depth about some cool projects they're doing. We're going to learn about their organization and really understand their connection to wild food and wild places and all the wild things that we love talking about. So that's coming up. First, I'll get a bit of news out of the way. Let's see, the big news for me. Oh, if you didn't see, everyone, we're launching a magazine. That's kind of a big deal. We're going to be coming out with our first edition in March. It's going to be a quarterly publication. We're going to be doing virtual and print on demand. So what that really means is you will have the ability to read online on our website. You'll, if you subscribe to it, you will get a PDF copy of the magazine. And then if so you choose, you can also in the same medium order a printed copy, which will print and ship to your house. So this is really great for us, one, because we don't really want to hold a lot of stock of a magazine on hand and deal with all the distribution and stuff of it. And then, you know, all that paper if nobody wants paper. So we're really just leaving it up to you to see, hey, do we want to read it electronically or do we want to, you know, have the paper version? I personally will probably buy both, but that's just me because I still love the feel of a magazine on the fingertips. But the cool thing about the electronic version is that it has the ability for the advertisements that you see in there. You can click those, and they'll go directly to the link. So we're going to have some cool companies that we're working with that are going to be advertising in the publication. You'll be able to see their stuff up front on the pages and then also click through directly to that. So that's a cool shortcut that we want to offer you. So that's a neat functionality of it. We'll also, I think we're going to try to embed some videos in there and just have some cool functionality to really like add some extra elements to the magazine that makes it even more entertaining than normal. But really excited. We've solidified the lineup. We've assigned the writers. So really we're kind of in the production and design phase of it. So we're pushing forward into March. Mid-March is our target release date. Keep an eye out. We will socialize this very much across all our platforms so that you know whenever it's coming out. Outside of that, we still have virtual cooking classes, so those are available. Adam and myself have been chomping away every couple weeks, one of us knocking out one of those classes. I think next up, either this week or next, I'll be teaching a egg rolls class, so classic wild game take on classic like Chinese food egg rolls, which is really fun. Not challenging to do, but just fun to do. You really use a ton of different ingredients around the house to put into an egg roll, and it's just like a mini fried burrito, in my opinion. If you listen enough, you'll understand how much I love burritos and tacos, so that goes without explanation. Outside of that, I took my daughter out this weekend up into the mountains here in Colorado, and we decided to go traipse through about knee-deep snow in some places and shot my first pine squirrel. Super stoked about that. It was cold and snowy, and she had snow all over her boots, but I will go on record saying this is the first thing that I have shot in Colorado since I've been here. If you've listened to past episodes, you will know that I had a little rough start to my Colorado hunting season. But we broke that. We broke it this weekend. So moving forward, it's just going to be infinite game everywhere, I hope. But if not, it is what it is. We still had a good time. It was great getting my daughter out up into the mountains and checking things out. So with that said, I'll go over to Colin. Colin, you got any updates?
Hey, everybody. This is Colin. I actually don't have any updates. It's been kind of a slow week here. Haven't been able to get out for any waterfowl. That's really the only thing open right now. But this Saturday is the Veterans Day, Active Duty Day, waterfowl. So I'm going to try and get out there for that at least one more time. That being said, can I talk about the seasonings?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? Let's talk about this.
All right. So we're
go for it.
We're going to be releasing a line of wild game blended seasonings later in the year.
And fish.
Game and fish blended seasonings.
And forageables, too.
And forageables. So I got my first set of four yesterday, and I diced up a couple of mule deer steaks and seasoned them per the instructions and tested them out. I'm not going to tell you which ones are my favorite because I don't want to influence the court here. But it was pretty cool. It was a lot of fun. Got to try out the different flavors and kind of go back and forth and see which ones I liked, what I liked about different ones, and took some notes on them. And you get to snack on some nice wild game in the process. But tonight I'm going to do the same thing with some Canada goose that I have from out here, some gadwall that I have that's also from out here, and I think I pulled out some elk backstrap for it also. So I'm going to do the elk tonight too. And then I remember that I have some blacktail backstrap in my freezer, so I'll probably do that tomorrow. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, so what we're doing is we're taking all these spices. So we've identified, I should say, Casey and I identified like four blends we wanted to test out on Big Game. And so once we received those blends, I then compiled this kind of sheet to test it. And because all of us have different types of game in our freezer, I just went with the Big Game, different types of elk, different types of deer. I tested antelope. We've got bear on the list. And so I didn't tell them the names of the spices, the spice blends, or I told you what was in it.
Yeah, it has a description, like ingredients.
Yeah, you have a description so you know, but I didn't tell you I didn't want to sway a title favorite. So what they did is everybody's divided up, just like Colin said, and testing a certain amount of meat with a certain amount of spice, and then we're going to rank order. Everybody's rank ordering these spices, and then at the end I'm going to compile all the data, and we're going to pick the different blends and assign them to, like, Big Game and waterfowl will be this two run. And then next up we'll be doing upland fowl, so that will include all your flying birds. That's fowl. And turkey. So we'll try to have that one out for turkey season. But the Big Game one we'll have now because I'm hoping that the majority of folks have Big Game in their freezer and they're like, yeah, let's do this. Let's try out this sweet new seasoning. So that's the plan there. I'm glad, Colin, you brought it up. Completely slipped my mind. But
yeah,
we're super excited and just know that we are thoroughly enjoying the testing because, as Colin mentioned, we get to eat all this, which is great.
The best part.
Yes. So anything else, Colin?
No, that's it for me.
All right, great. Well, I will introduce our guest. So tonight we have two guests on. So our first guest today grew up spending time in the outdoors at her family's farm in Missouri and was fortunate to have a father who took her out fishing on the streams, ponds, and lakes that are plentiful throughout the Ozark region. As an adult, he also took her deer and turkey hunting, starting new traditions she continues with her two kids. She is also the founder and CEO of Venku, the number one site to book hunting and fishing trips across America. Our second guest is an Eagle Scout who grew up in a military household. His father was a fighter pilot and colonel in the Air Force, and his family moved a lot, which gave him the opportunity to live in many beautiful places across the U.S. and cultivate a love for the outdoor activities. With his wife, Jerry Ann.
Got it.
Did I say that right?
Okay.
Oh, sweet. Whew. With his wife, Jerry Ann, as his business partner, he spent 20-something years in the restaurant business, operating popular venues ranging from white tablecloth to casual Italian. His interest in wild game came after their semi-retirement when he and his wife no longer had access to the high-quality meats and produce available to them through their commercial suppliers. Please welcome Muriel Gaither and John Wyman to the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Thank you so much, Justin. Appreciate that introduction, and it is our pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Excited to be here.
We're excited to have you both on and chat through all this fun stuff we've got lined up. I'm excited about that. I will give credit. Corey writes really great introductions. That's kind of his thing too. So I will not take credit for that, but I do love it equally. So with that, will you each kind of tell us a little bit about yourself? I mentioned kind of where you're from, but any other details and then how you're introduced in the outdoors?
Father, daughter.
Absolutely, yes. Oh. So, we are related. So the father that introduced me to the outdoors is, I'm fortunate enough to have him sitting right here next to me, and we're now business partners in our current venture at Ben Coop. But as the introduction stated, yes, we spent a lot of time enjoying the outdoors together whenever I was a child. We were always sneaking away and visiting the various streams and waterways around us. We live on the Mississippi River. So aside from actually being able to fish and enjoy some of the other tributaries and waterways around us, we have this phenomenal body of water that that was there that we could.
And we've yet to figure out what to do with.
Right. Really fish it, so.
You can't swim across it.
You can. Yeah.
And there's some crazy catfish.
Yes, crazy huge catfish. But so that really was my first introduction to the outdoors. As you mentioned too, as I have gotten older, our family farm property in central Missouri has become incredibly important, and that's actually where I was introduced to hunting as an adult. I've come to the sport of hunting, and now those are traditions that we are really thrilled to be carrying on with my two children. Traditions that I didn't necessarily have growing up, hunting traditions, but it's really neat to see their connection to where their food is coming from and the fact that this animal gave its life, and now we're respectfully preparing it and enjoying it together as a family and sharing that together as a family is extremely powerful, and it's something that I don't feel I learned early. I don't think I learned that early enough. There was that disconnect until I actually was able to get out there and experience it for myself.
Absolutely. And you were talking about your first pine squirrel. So we recently became the proud owners of a 1948 Springfield 22 long rifle that is a match to one that has been in my family since probably 1948. So I've got two grandkids, Muriel's kids, that are definitely going squirrel hunting this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Perfect.
Yes.
That is super cool. We just my daughter's been on me about the squirrel hunting, and we've been very focused on, like, it was big game season, so we were trying to go through deer, and like we were out in eastern Colorado with Colin and like out on the plains, and she's like, "Dad, where are the squirrels at?" And I'm like, "There's no trees out here." And she's like, "Yeah, but I want to go squirrel hunting." And I was like, "Well, how about we go goose hunting instead?" And she's like, "Well, I don't know, like
they're pretty similar.
I just kind of want to," yeah. I don't know why she was so excited to go squirrel hunting, but we went on Sunday, and she had a blast. Despite getting, like, very snowy, like snow all in her boots, like feet wet, all that, we had to call a little early because of that. But now she has the squirrel tail is in salt up in the kitchen. She's excited to, like, to have it and, like,
And you know what? Squirrels are having a moment.
Yes, they are.
We talked about, that was one of the things years ago I wanted to get into, because I thought, you always see them everywhere. It seems like they're so plentiful. Mm-hmm. That is, until you try to hunt them, and then they're nowhere to be. I always thought it seems like something really easy to get into and entertaining, and you kind of combine a trek through the woods along with hunting, and it seems a lot more accessible. And I think that folks are really starting to pick up on that accessibility. And we've even have stories, and I know we're going to talk about it here in a little bit, but in the cookbook, one of our contributors even mentions just how laid back and casual squirrel hunting is, and how it can be such a palate refresher from all of the expectation and the pressure that comes along with some of these other hunts. You can just get out there and renew your love of hunting and renew your passion for hunting in that way. And I think squirrel hunting is becoming a lot more popular now than it has been over the last several decades.
Yeah.
For that reason. Mm-hmm. I think so, and I think another cool thing, it's a very, like, it's a communal activity as well. So you can go out with, like, a group of people or share it, whereas sometimes, you know, you go deer hunting or elk hunting or big game hunting, and it's oftentimes you're kind of solo. And so it has that, like, solidary moments. While that can translate very well into small game, I think it also, on the other side of the spectrum, just like you mentioned, it's easy to get folks introduced to it. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get people excited about it because the success rate's higher. And then it's also something that, like, you know, us four could go out and just do and, like, and still have a conversation and a good time and, like, enjoy each other's company. So.
And they are a lot easier to pack out.
Much. I carried mine like this. I'm like, ah, I got it. I put it in the freezer. So I skinned it and it's in the freezer. I want to wait till I get other squirrels.
probably
as much as I would love. Yeah, I'll probably wait till we get a good, hopefully a few more. So, yeah. Sorry, Colin. Go ahead.
No, I think another part of it is like the ease of going squirrel hunting. It's just like, hey, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, do you want to go hunt squirrels in the backyard? And you just walk out into the woods. And it's not like, hey, you want to go deer hunting? And then we have to get all this gear, and all of a sudden it's an hour and a half later, and you're like, oh, yeah, well, it's kind of late. So
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You just kind of pick up and go.
Yeah, really cool.
And you get to take your dog. I mean, there's a lot of, like, just a lot of family.
Yeah.
They create squirrel dogs. I mean, they can chase them down, get them off the tree. I mean, they're seeing things that you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, although there are a lot of folks that get very serious about training small game dogs, squirrel dogs or rabbit dogs and so forth, but at the same time, just the family pet out in the woods with you is a blast as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think that's – I was definitely thinking about that. I was like, man, I wish I had a dog out here with me. help my success rate. But a cool thing is that so in some of the Colorado state parks, a certain part of the year they carve out and they allow small game hunting in certain designated areas. So otherwise throughout the year you're not getting any type of hunting pressure at all, and it's just like you can just go out and kind of wander the hiking trails, and, you know, it does add a layer of complexity to it because you're like, ah, there's hikers out here too. Like, I want to be extra safe, but it's also like there's some untapped squirrel resources out here that I'm here to take advantage of.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's really cool. And we have actually a variety of squirrel hunts that are available on the site too. We have not yet booked one, but anybody who's listening right now and is interested in getting into squirrel hunting or trying their hand at squirrel hunting, definitely look us up because we've got plenty of access to those.
Well, it's a great gateway experience too. So I mean, my first whitetail was a little bit scary simply because it's a big animal. I mean, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
How exactly do you handle it? There's a lot of responsibility that comes with it, and you know, not so much with a squirrel. So,
yep,
that's how I learned to skin a deer was by skinning a squirrel and rabbit.
Absolutely,
I like it. Well, since you mentioned it, let's talk a little bit about what VenQ Outdoors is. And then after that, we'll talk about the cookbook and we'll tie them together. So I guess what is it and what inspired it?
At VenQ, we help people book hunting and fishing experiences. At this point, we have over 600 hosts on the platform. They're vetted, top-notch guides, outfitters, and private landowners from all across America. And we have over 2,700 experiences that are readily available to be booked, which means you can hop on the site right now, and if you want to go on in a guana hunt in Florida next week, you can search and find something and book it. It's a really neat tool and platform. On the flip side, too, one of the things that as we were developing the platform really stood out to us is that there are so many barriers that people experience when trying to get outdoors. And personally, you know, as I mentioned, I came to the sport of hunting as an adult. And even with fishing, too, you know, there are a number of barriers and a lot of factors that can be very intimidating for people who are just starting out. So We have worked to eliminate as many of those barriers as possible. That includes lack of knowledge, lack of access to the experience, lack of knowledge, which is addressed through having a good variety of experiences. Some of them are guided, some are semi-guided or self-guided, and they can really be tailored to whatever your experience level is. And then lack of equipment. A lot of times with hunting and fishing experiences, the equipment is a huge barrier because the cost is so much to start to get started with it. And so a lot of the guides and outfitters that we work with will actually provide the equipment, whether it's in the form of the weapon or in the form of waders or other types of equipment mm-hmm. that they'll need. And so really seeing our vision for the platform is that we're making the outdoors more accessible and one by one knocking down those barriers that people commonly experience to accessing those.
And I was just looking here at your this is one because being in Colorado, I was like, ooh, what's in Colorado? So Chicago Basin Summer Drop Camp. And for those who don't know, like drop camp, that's the full deal. Just basically just bring your clothes and whatever you need to harvest the animal, and like that's pretty solid. And
There's different layers too to the trip. So for the drop camps, for example, you could opt to have those guided. You can opt to have all inclusive, where there's actually a chef there preparing the meals for you, so you literally just show up and enjoy yourself. There's immersive wilderness experiences all the way to urban experiences, where you know, depending on where you're living, you could just go right outside your back door and within 30 minutes be outdoors and have everything that you need to enjoy it to the utmost.
So what is one of your favorite out of all the trips and things you have on? And this is a very broad question because I see it's like it's all encompassing, but like what's the one that stands out is like, this one looks really cool, either that you've done or that you're like, I want to do this one.
I have not done this one yet, but we have a black bear hunt in Alaska that is by boat. And so it's kind of like a spot and stalk, but by boat.
Mm-hmm.
So the host, Sam, will actually take you up the river, and he'll take you to some of the areas where the bears are feeding in the springtime. And along the way, he will also go crabbing, and you all will eat the crabs that he has prepared for your group. And so I just think that sounds like such a phenomenal experience. You kind of have all of these different sensory experiences colliding in this one. Not only are you out with a super experienced Alaskan guide and hunting one of the tastiest meats that you possibly can be, spring bear.
Yes.
But you're also enjoying all of the other fruits of the sea and the river and just the full experience. Sounds really cool to me.
Oh, yeah, that
sounds
really awesome.
Yeah, I might have to look into that one.
Yeah, I'll send
well,
you
while you're, do, while you're doing that, look into this night of frogging down in Louisiana. Because
yes.
We got a guy
got
a rice plantation down there, and they know what they're doing. They raise these huge bullfrogs, and so you go out and you do, you frog all night, and then they'll prepare them for you. And you get a little Zydeco, and you get a little beer, and you get a little whatever else going on. And it looks like an absolute blast. So,
how funny. So I'm in Alaska
and
Louisiana.
But at the same time, I'm thinking about New Mexico, or the packing trip. In New Mexico with trout fishing, I mean, you're packing into these, really just these virgin streams, and you're catching these native, these native trout in the in the mountains of New Mexico, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like one of those once in a lifetime things. So there's so many opportunities on Bencoo that are opportunities that are readily replicable and easily accessible. But then there's also just those ones that they're just showstoppers. Mm-hmm. They're once in a lifetime things, and you know if you did this, it's going to stick with you.
Yeah.
I think it's super awesome. I was just looking at the frogging, Louisiana frogging. I like it. There's so many frogs on this picture. That's phenomenal. But what I noticed on there is is you guys have on the website too. So it's you're very upfront about how many people it accommodates, if it's pet friendly and kid friendly, which I think is really important, being a dad of two younglings, and then also handicapped accessible. So those are all really cool things that I think add a little bit of element. I appreciate the attention to detail on the website because it communicates a lot of things up front, which is really cool.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. And that was definitely the goal. And, you know, I think if anybody has spent any time researching these trips on their own, that information is really hard to find. And a lot of times if you're, you know, researching and you're calling a number of different outfitters or guides, and you've got your questions prepared, the information is just very inconsistent. There's no standardized
form.
And so that's a big thing that a big part of what we're doing is just bringing a standardization to the information that's available out there about these experiences so that you can easily compare and shop
and
around and and plan. Exactly.
And I think, it's pretty valuable to have all the information kind of at one spot, too. And I like the geographical layout of it, of you can basically click the states and you'd be like, oh, well, you know, I'm in Texas, or I'm going to visit Louisiana, or I'm going to Alaska, or I want to go, and you just, boom, click it. Sorry, Colin, I cut you off.
No, that's all right. I played around with it a little bit before the show started. Can you filter by those options also? So can you filter by, like, I want something that's pet friendly?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's really helpful also. Just other than having to like search through individual ones, you know, but like.
Definitely. I mean, if you know you want to go snow goose hunting, I mean, you can filter by snow geese, and you can see everything that's on the platform as far as, so we have snow goose hunts in North Carolina and Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas,
Canada.
Canada. I mean, literally all over. So one of the beauties of the platform is that, I mean, these things, these folks, I mean, the hosts on our platform are, I mean, they're just like these unsung heroes. I mean, they're just absolute experts. They love what they're doing. So many of them are just completely immersed in the outdoor lifestyle. And, I mean, they're just top notch.
Mm-hmm.
And these folks are everywhere, but you'll never really know. You know, it's hard to get them kind of like in one place where you can just see it and experience it all and really just get to pick and choose new and exciting things. So, I mean, if all you've ever done is just hunted ducks, you know, then finding out these different experiences, different activities that you can do, I think that's really one of the beauties of Vancouver.
Yeah, and that's been one of the most fun parts of my job is just being able to discover all of these things and tell people about them. Just one example, so many folks are still blown away by hog hunting. The fact that there are feral hogs and they are an invasive species and there are certain parts of the country where you don't need a license and the season is year-round and you can hunt them anytime and then you can eat them afterwards. Like, people are just blown away by that. So. And same thing with the iguana hunts. And so there's been all of these really fun, very geographic-specific experiences that unless you've been to that area or unless you've known somebody who's had that experience, you're not going to get that same exposure and even be aware that that's out there.
Sure.
And so that's one of the, you know, that's one of the big things that we've undertaken is just bringing awareness not only to these experiences but then also the hosts who are out there that are, you know, making these experiences happen for people all day, every day, and doing a phenomenal job at it, too.
So I do have one question, and I don't know, Colin, you may want to ask this question because I saw you add it to the list.
Yeah.
Oh.
Where did the name come from?
Did the name come from?
Yeah, how'd you go
from there? Yeah.
It actually means outdoors in Czech Republic. Czech language.
All right.
We deliberated about the name for a very long time, and the URL for the name was available, and it meant outdoors, albeit in another language. But
that's
we
so cool.
Yeah, we felt like it still kind of captured the energy of being outdoors, and it rolled off the tongue pretty easily too.
Yeah, it's different.
Okay, cool. So Czech for outdoors. So it's almost like outdoors, but
I know.
I like it.
We have had people say your name means outdoors, and then you have outdoors, but it works.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I like it.
Well, you'll
all right,
get,
so.
I'll be sending you a hat and a t-shirt.
Okay.
So let's shift gears a little bit here, because as I was clicking through the website, I've now landed on the recipes section, which I do love guided trips and stuff, but I also love food just as much. So I've landed on that section, and the first thing I see is your cookbook. So can you tell me a little bit about this cookbook? Because I saw it come out, but I didn't dive into it too much because I knew we were going to have this conversation.
Absolutely. So we thought up, we kind of dreamed up this idea last year. And really, so it comes from a good place, but then it also kind of comes from a place of frustration, because now we're fully ingrained in the outdoor industry. We market, we promote, we're always out posting things and trying to get the word out there about outdoor activities, predominantly hunting and fishing. And it has been really frustrating to us, just the negative connotations that come along with hunting and people's perceptions of what it actually is and what it means. And so we were sitting around and thinking up some different ideas and different ways to engage the community. And one of the things that kept coming up is food. Everybody has, you know, hunting and fishing aside, regardless of what their feelings are, everybody loves a great meal and they love enjoying that time together and spending that time together. And so we thought, well, what are some different ways that we can bring food into what we're doing here at Benku? And around that same time, we were becoming really aware and impressed with just the breadth of chefs who are out there, whether they're professionally trained or homegrown talent, out there on Instagram and social media. And they're out there and they're just constantly creating. They're pulling things out of their fridge and they're just whipping up these incredible recipes. And they're not really getting the credit or the accolades that we felt they should be getting. And so the cookbook was a way of bringing together not only trying to cast a more positive light on hunting and then the experience afterwards, but also these incredible creators who are out there and they're ethically harvesting wild game, and then they're also walking us through that process of, after the animal is harvested, then what happens? You know, then it's the creation of these wonderful meals that you get to share with family and friends, and you get to share the story, you know, what it means to you and what it actually was to harvest that animal, which is pretty cool.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. And you know, really when you think about the end result of harvesting game is for provisions. I mean, it's provide food for you and your family. And so when we look at also just the, you know, different ways to get people engaged in outdoors and excited about outdoor experiences, I mean, it's just a very natural segue. And so we're kind of looking at the, you know, pairing the recipes and the cookbooks with the different experiences on Benku, and at just tying everything all together so that not only are you harvesting this Roosevelt elk column like you did this year in Oregon, but also, you know, the ways to prepare it and the ways to take care of the meat and just to kind of bring everything full circle, because ultimately that's what it's about. So I've spent about 20 years in the restaurant business, and most of that time was in the back of the house. I mean, I was in the kitchen. And
yeah, back of the house.
Absolutely. And so my first experience, my first experience hunting, other than as a child, squirrel hunting with my grandfather, who did not skin the squirrels. My grandmother did. She also could cook them, and she was a pretty amazing person. But was quail and dove hunting as a young adult. And the doves were just, they were just were never prepared properly. They weren't enjoyable. And so I really felt bad about shooting an animal that I wasn't going to eat. And so I really didn't hunt for a number of years, and then kind of got back into it with wanting to try venison, and got into whitetail hunting, which is you know, huge in the Midwest and Missouri and Southern Illinois, which, you know, these are all that's where we live. That's kind of our country. And after all the years in the restaurant, butchering out meat and primal cuts and taking that deer and breaking it all the way down, just that first time, and just how special that was, and how unbelievably delicious the result was. The venison was just out of this world. Mm-hmm. And I was just hooked from then on. So, you know, I think as you guys were talking earlier, once we got out, my family got out of the restaurant business, I mean, sourcing good food is a little difficult. I mean, we've got some great local producers and local farms and so forth, but, you know, initially, if you just are relying on the grocery store, it's not very easy to get great food. So we looked at wild game as, you know, as kind of an answer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think it's, yeah, that speaks so much truth, and you both mentioned is like that commonality and the community aspect of like everybody speaks food.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has to eat. It's part of human nature. And then, you know, there's a very small portion of the population that doesn't enjoy good food. And, you know, when you think about really caring where your food comes from and kind of like following the origins and the path and really being like, I want to know what's in this and where it came from, and kind of starting to really care about what's going in your body, I think that's the main connection piece between hunting and fishing and food and community.
Absolutely. Well, I'm not sure if you guys saw the report that Onyx published maybe a couple of months ago, but in it they mentioned that 77% of the hunters in 2020 that they had polled hunted for meat. So I think that, you know, what we're seeing is there's this shift that's beginning to happen, and thankfully, people are becoming much more aware of the power that they have,
mm-hmm.
transforming this animal that they've harvested into bounty for their fridge and for their family to sustain them through the months, but also to the potential. You know, gone are the days of, well, that tastes gamey, or, you know,
That's a bad word on this show. You can't say
yeah,
that. The G word. just kidding.
Stuff it with cream cheese, and that's how we always
hear uh-huh.
that. Those days are over. There's no excuse for that anymore. Not that those dove bites aren't absolutely delicious. Prepare that
uh-huh.
way. It's really neat to see all of the potential and all of the different ways, and let curiosity be your guide with, well, let's dispel some of these myths and let's see exactly what the potential is that we can do with this animal. And you know, I just have to mention actually several of the guests that you've had on the podcast were featured as contributors in our cookbook. And one of them that comes to mind specifically is Adam Berkelman. And he is,
yeah,
the intrepid eater. Not only is his attitude and his joy just palpable, you know, the work that he's doing with food and in the kitchen on a daily basis, but just how innovative his recipes are.
Mm-hmm.
Just a delight, and really makes you want to go out and harvest this particular type of meat just so that you can experiment with the recipes and experiment with what he's created. But the same can be said of every single one of the contributors in our cookbook. That was another kind of reason or way that we went about choosing the recipes too, is that we wanted to pick the game that people were usually disregarding, or, you know, not really that excited about, and we wanted to make it something that they were excited about. So in the cookbook, you'll find a recipe for a pulled teal, pulled barbecue teal, which, you know, teal is for a lot of people the first hunt back after a long break from waterfowl hunting. But it's also not necessarily everybody's favorite waterfowl mm-hmm. to eat, so the fact that that we can introduce a recipe that you know, can maybe make you excited about that first hunt back after a long break. Definitely exciting to us. We also had a squirrel wing, buffalo squirrel wing. So,
Man, I'm gonna have to look that one up.
that might be squirrels to good use there. And then earlier, Colin, we were talking about the razor clam, and we've got phenomenal razor clam chowder recipe in the cookbook.
Oh, okay.
One of our Pacific Northwest contributors, Rachel. So I think that, you know, we try to be thoughtful in bringing together all different kinds of game and types of recipes too. I'm more of a fewer ingredients and quicker to the table kind of person, whereas my father, John, is a process-oriented person, and I gifted him the book for Christmas, the charcuterie, what was it, he likes to cure things and, like, let meat sit for a really long time and develop, like, a layer of mold that you have to cut off and then tries to feed it.
there might be some German in my background, because if you can grind it up and stuff it into something, I'm all about it. Or pack it down, smoke it, cure it, let some mold grow on it. I'm all about that. So I definitely, and I don't know if you've done it or not, but venison prosciutto, just using the front shoulder. I've tried it a couple of times, and both times it's just turned out phenomenal.
And he's had it all.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I've had it all.
Yeah. All to himself.
Is it one of those things, like, you have it on the counter, and, like, every time you pass by it, you got to get, like, a little shave of it? You're like, oh, this is good. I'll come back by after doing a chore, just another little shave.
But the first bite was kind of tough. It's like that cloak. It was a brave man that first ate an oyster. So it was like when I scraped the mold off of the first one, I was like, everybody was like, you are not going to eat that. I was like, I really am. I'm gonna do this. In the basement for 6 months. We're gonna give it a shot.
I can definitely appreciate that. I keep wanting to try. I want to do what was it, Colin? Was it Wade and Rachel from Elevated Outdoors?
Elevated Wild.
No, Elevated Wild. Elevated Wild. Yeah. Sorry, Wade and Rachel. Elevated Wild. They had some cured beaver meats.
Beaver ham prosciutto.
On my to-do list.
Yeah.
Yeah, beaver ham prosciutto.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try it, or did you just hear them talking about
mm-mm.
it?
We had them on the show. We were talking about game fats and stuff, and it evolved into learning about this prosciutto, and I was just like...
Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. My attention was piqued, and I was like, "Oof, this sounds good." And I've yet to come across any out in the wild, so still on the list. But I'm gonna have to add that front shoulder on there now for the prosciutto too.
Yeah, because a lot of times, you know, especially with smaller deer, there's not a lot you can do with that shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping it all intact, and you know, and essentially, really, what you're doing is curing and drying it. It's a good way to use it, and every little slice is such a delicacy. So it turns out to be very, very special, and just a way to, you know, that you just get to enjoy that venison a little longer. I mean, you're not just like throwing it in the crock pot and it's gone, you know, it's gone the next day. So,
it kind of stretches it out.
That's part two to the Venku cookbook, calling anybody that has a cured or sausage or other recipe to contribute. We might have to do part two for our cookbook that's focused on alternative methods of preparation.
Just throwing it out there for everybody that's listening to this. I mean, if you're a fan of the outdoors and you've got a great recipe, shoot it our way. I mean, we would love to get it up, get it in
the next cookbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get it in the next edition. You
absolutely
bet.
Nice. See, I really appreciate that, the openness to just like, everybody bring your recipes. Like, let's just share.
You bet.
And it's awesome.
So,
yeah.
So, I mean, things that I really might enjoy, you know, might not trip your trigger, but, and, you know, and vice versa. So there's a lot to be said for, you know, just for diversity and creativity and, you know, everybody's got their thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I'm going to ask, because I've been flipping through the book here, what's each of your favorite recipes in this book?
I know.
A great question, actually. That's a great question. The buttermilk fried quail, I have to admit, every time I see that, and I think it looks phenomenal.
I'm going for flip palates, frog legs.
I just saw those, and I'm like, "You're on a frog kick right now. We're gonna find you in Louisiana here pretty soon on that frog trip."
You said that, and my first go to is a soft shell crab, and
I was just looking at that. It looks so good.
Yeah, so I mean, and you know, that recipe comes out of Apalachicola, Florida, mm-hmm. which is if you're a fan of fishing and crabbing and just the bounty of the ocean. That's just like one of the most amazing places in the country. But frog legs are so crazy because you don't get them. I mean, it's not something that's just very, very common anymore. Mm-hmm. I grew up eating them, and now they're just an absolute delicacy. And for the most part, if you're not catching them yourself in a swamp or perhaps in a rice paddy down in Louisiana, which, you know, we can hook up with. They're coming from Indonesia. And frankly, that's not what I want to eat. So.
No, flavor's not the same. And you never know, the quality of the frog from abroad.
Yeah.
Yeah, like.
Gotta get some homegrown frogs, right?
Yeah. I too grew up, we call it like frog gigging in Oklahoma. And it was like, that was our summer evening and night activity, is like to go out with a spotlight and we'd go walk around all the cattle ponds and like find them. Occasionally we'd run into some snakes, but most of the time it was we were running into frogs, but there was nothing more that we like. Then we'd bring them back and clean them up, and like my grandmother would fry them up, and it's just like it was phenomenal. And I actually, into culinary school, that was one of my entering recipes into the scholarship competition, was I made frog legs as like an appetizer. Yeah.
So one of the restaurants that we operated was a Creole restaurant, and frog legs featured prominently on the menu. And at a time when really, I mean, you can't go to a restaurant and get frog legs. But yeah, that's I mean, the French loved them, and so, you know.
Yep.
Take it from there.
I think the only time I've had frog legs, I think I've had them maybe like two or three times, but the most recent time in memory was at a New Orleans festival in San Diego a few years ago, and they had alligator bites, crawfish boil, and frog legs.
Nice.
That was like the only...
Was it Gator by the Bay?
Yeah, something like that. It's like a New Orleans jazz fest type thing. They got a whole bunch of music.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. I remember going to that, yep. too.
Very cool.
But they're delicious.
Oh yes, absolutely. And just and such a unique thing, and again a delicacy. So just if you ever have the opportunity to experience that, please do. And that's neat. We do have several hosts in Oklahoma who offer bow fishing, and then also frog gigging and some of those other. Really, they'll just take you out at night, and you just get into all kinds of trouble.
See what happens.
No beer involved.
Yeah. Well,
oh,
yeah.
Definitely not.
No.
Right.
but I would also have to say the peppercorn venison. Going back to the cookbook now, the peppercorn venison with Roquefort. I think that's simple, and it sounds like it would just be a delight for the palate. Sounds like the tanginess and sharpness of the blue cheese would match well with the mellowness of the venison and the richness of the venison meat. So I think that's another one. Easy to implement, but again, you know, just bringing some different ingredients together that refreshes it and makes it something new and uses ingredients that most of us probably already have in our homes.
Oh yeah, and that's from Kevin. Kevin's been on the show too.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. Very cool. He's got a really neat story and just the work that he's been involved with in the past.
Oh yeah.
Their show From the Wild, really cool.
That show is phenomenal. I've definitely put that on and just like watched it. You don't even have to hear the sound. You can just look at it. Like it's just so visually and stimulating and just a really, really great show.
Yes. So we have some classics included in the cookbook. There's teriyaki recipe. There's definitely some chili recipes. Initially, I thought we were going to have a whole section for taco recipes, but somehow the taco recipes ended up making it into the final cut of the cookbook. So we'll have to save that for cookbook part two as well. But yeah, there's really a great eclectic mix, and I think something for everyone. One of the things, though, and did I see correctly that you all have put together a cookbook as well? Was it or you have a cookbook?
So we do have a cookbook. We do have a cookbook that was mainly a lot of my contributions that we released back in 2017. And then we are also working on a cookbook project that's TBD. This is a first heard, but we've been working on it for a couple months now. We'll see how it goes. I'm not sure the timeline on it, but yeah.
Very cool. Well, that was something that I was not necessarily prepared for, was just the level of difficulty bringing mm-hmm. all of the different formats together and the images and the just all of the formatting and everything that went into creating the cookbook. Definitely gives me so much respect for all of the other anthologies out there that just make it look so easy. You mm-hmm. open them up and you're just transported and they do such a great job at with thematic. It's challenging.
Yeah, it is. I tell you guys though, you did a great job laying it out. Like it's very it's good on the eyes. Like it looks great. It's visually appealing. All the photography is great, and then the layout, you know, the steps, everything's communicated very, very good up front. So I do
That is completely on the contributors. They were phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And the photos are all, each of the recipes is credited with the contributors' social mm-hmm. media account of preference. Most of them were from Instagram. Some of them have their own websites and own documentation. But that was definitely something that was important to us with this project because the whole idea is discovery and exploration. And so we wanted for folks to be able to follow the breadcrumb trail back to their new favorite chef that they're then going to do a deep dive into.
Absolutely.
And absorb all the information they possibly can from them online.
So if we're going to look at roasted oysters or roasting oysters, I mean, it's done differently in South Carolina than it is done in Maine and than mm-hmm. it is done in Washington State. And so, I mean, being able to have a forum where everybody gets the voice and it's not just one mm-hmm. kind of one single voice. And I think we mentioned earlier too that one of the end results of this cookbook eventually is to have enough material. So we'll just be sliding this into all the listings. So yeah. So if you do go on a halibut trip in Alaska, you'll end up with some great ways to use to prepare that halibut for your friends and family afterwards as well. So it's all just part of, I mean, to us, it's just part of the experience. I mean, it's just such an important part. And very interestingly enough, our hosts all feel the same way. I mean, mm-hmm. they all, not only are they experts in the field of procuring their particular game, but also in preparing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's awesome. And I think it's so important to convey both sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's a great motivator that you guys have is because you're like, all right, here's this experience, here's this awesome adventure to go out and obtain your own food, and then also, hey, here's how you can prepare it and like really enjoy it and make the most of the animal. And I think that comes full circle. It's really awesome.
Absolutely.
So where can folks find your cookbook? I mentioned it earlier, but what are some of the best ways for them to go to it?
Absolutely. Well, am I able to say our website like right now? Just Okay.
Please.
You can visit venku.com, and that's V-E-N-K-U.com. And up on the top navigation bar, there's a section that says recipes. So you can read more about the cookbook project, kind of the origin story, as well as see each of the contributors with direct links to social media accounts, profiles, or other online collateral. And then you can also either view the cookbook for free or download for free. It's a completely free digital cookbook, and again, gets at that the primary motivation, which is really just to bring more awareness to these incredible outdoor experiences through food. Just another approach that we hope to reach people through.
Yeah, I think you hit on that piece that shows your motives true, is that it's free. You just want to share with folks, which is great.
Absolutely.
So after folks have gone and visited your website, where's the best place they can connect with you on social media? Or what's a good way to connect with you both if they've got questions, comments, concerns, they want to throw a recipe in the next cookbook?
Oh, yes. Anywhere and everywhere. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, I think. We even have a Pinterest account. But
any button that says contact us,
yes,
or info here, or,
yes,
or enter your email, it pretty much comes to us.
It so. Does, yes. And we would love to have the collaboration. We would also love just any notes that anybody has to send, if you want to share your own experience, or we especially want to see people trying the recipes and sharing their feedback with us as well. We want to see pictures. We want to see the engagement during the hunt and then post-hunt trying out one of the recipes. There'd be nothing better than us being able to showcase these recipes actually being taste-tested in the wild in people's personal private kitchens.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at your Instagram page now. I like to peruse the internet while also talking. it's not a distraction. It just adds to the realness. You guys have some awesome
Instagram page. You have to tell us what your outdoor horoscope is.
Oh, let's see. What's my outdoor horoscope?
I don't know. Yeah. Do you visit social media while you're in the deer stand?
I don't know. Most often I'm in places where the signal's not that great and my cell phone's terrible. So usually not. I'm usually on Colin's cell phone though, because he's got better service.
Yeah, and most of my hunting spots are all like 40 minutes, you know, an hour away from where I am, so I get like full bars. I get more cell service when I'm out hunting than I do in my own house.
Oh, I know. That was my experience this last time too at our farm. Like, I had full bars when we were out in the stand, and at the house itself, like, we get no signal. I have to rely on Wi-Fi. So.
Oh, let's see. So my zodiac sign is an outdoor activity. So I'm a Sagittarius. So horseback riding is mine.
Accurate or no?
I've spent more time on horseback working than probably casually riding, so I don't know.
Mine is Gemini, which is hiking, and that's pretty fitting. I went hiking today. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's mine as well. And I think yours. Yep. So it's kind of funny. We've had some people who have given some pretty negative feedback about the outdoor horoscope, but...
You'll have to visit
our Instagram and see what we're talking about.
I feel a little bad for Taurus, who is glamping. So, yeah.
Although I don't feel bad for Cancer, which is winery and brewery.
Oh, no. Yes, I'm kind of jealous, actually.
Outdoor activities. Yes, the glamping, surprisingly enough, that one's gotten the most ire from people. They're like, glamping?
Not a glamper.
They don't identify as a glamper, so definitely been the more controversial one on there. But most folks are
outdoors, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good.
I'm with you, John. Whatever gets people outdoors and just enjoying it, like have fun. Who cares what you're doing? Just be safe and just enjoy it for what it is.
Absolutely.
So, well, we're kind of running down on time here. So what I like to do kind of the end is give everybody the opportunity for a last thought, a comment, question, whatever you want to leave the readers with, you want to ask us, anything of the sort. So we'll just do a quick around the room. So whichever one of you, Muriel or John, wants to go first, and then we'll move on from there.
John, you're up.
Wow. I guess I should have read the
show notes.
Yeah, the little show notes, the outline. I guess what if I had to leave anybody with any thoughts or any of my thoughts, you know, coming together to do this program. Number one, we're really excited about what you guys are doing, and
just the
whole idea of, you know, of bringing this full service and kind of taking the idea of harvesting game, foraging wild edibles and so forth, and just the important part that plays in our life. And from the standpoint of getting outside, whether it's, you know, you talk about your two young kids, being able to get outside and enjoy the day outdoors, and then also be productive, have a feeling of productivity and providing for your family. I know that in our fridge right now, we've got wild mushrooms. My wife just has this uncanny knack of spotting mushrooms. I mean, just driving down a country road at 50 miles an hour, she sees them.
Wait, stop. There they are.
it's nuts. I mean, even in town, we had our Christmas party in December and you know, we're headed home and there's this maple tree that had we actually got 9 pounds of oyster mushrooms off of, you know, off.
Holy smokes.
And it's just right awesome. Here. It's just right here at the intersection in town, you know, in the lawn of the Catholic Church. So this is the kind of thing that she can spot. So, you know, just being able to get outdoors, it tastes the bounty and just the beauty that our, and nutrition, I guess, mm-hmm. that
it's just there.
Yeah.
It's there and it's available, but you have to have the eyes to be able to see it in that experience as well.
Absolutely, yeah, that's it. So,
and I guess I'm gonna kind of piggyback on that a little bit, but from a conservation standpoint, you know, there is a lot of really big conversations that are happening right now around conservation and the outdoors. And why we need to care. And I think that it's critical, really. We're at a critical period in history right now where people are so disconnected from the outdoors. They're disconnected from green spaces and wild places. And so in order for us to have allies for conservation movements and for people to understand why it's so important that we preserve and protect these areas for future generations, you have to get them into the outdoors and get them engaged. And so I think that, you know, for anybody who's listening right now, whatever tools and means that you have of engaging people outdoors, do them. So if you have a platform to be able to engage people that way and educate people that way, if you have access, be taking somebody with you or introducing somebody to these activities, or if, you know, just whatever means that you have, people have to be able to experience it to know why it's so important that we care for it and care about it for future generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think both, yeah, well said. Totally in agreement with that. Colin, what you got?
Yeah, I thought this was a great conversation. I think the Benku platform is really fantastic. Admittedly, I didn't know a whole lot about it before we started the show, but just through like flipping through the cookbook as we were talking here and flipping through all the different options you have, and then talking to both of you as well, it definitely seems like it's a worthwhile platform. I'll surely be using it. If not the cookbook, then everything else coming up. And to tack on to what John was saying about the mushrooms, I actually got into some wild mushroom foraging out here. I'm in like one of the hot spots in North America for mushrooms. So I actually just finished off the last of my lobster mushrooms a few weeks ago. that I had dehydrated and kept in a jar. So, yeah,
that's
I'm
awesome.
Looking forward to this next year when I mean, you just have these giant lobster mushrooms that are you pull out like 1-pounders at a time. So,
holy
it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
Awesome.
I'm looking forward to that again. But yeah, one of those side quests, if you want to call it. It's not hunting in between seasons, maybe, but hey, there's mushrooms on the ground, so go look for them.
Yes.
Yeah, good reason to get out in the woods.
Oh, it is.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So, well, I first off want to say thank you both for coming on. It was a really great conversation. I'll echo what Colin said. Like, I think that Venku Outdoors, your guys' platform is, I mentioned earlier, like, the attention to detail, but both your passions show through very much on the website and just like connecting folks to the experiences, to the availability of harvesting their own food. And then to, you know, as we discussed earlier, bring it around full circle and like, hey, here's ways to prepare it. Like, we're not just here to sell you awesome trips to really cool places, but we want you to enjoy your food that you got there. So I think that's super cool, and a lot of places are missed that. So you guys really hit the nail on the head when you were like, let's share with the world. And then just the fact that it's free and you're inviting anybody to contribute that wants, I think it's really phenomenal. And I definitely understand the adventure that comes with that as well. So it's good to know. But yeah, thanks both for coming on the show, and I really appreciated that. Make sure those out there listening, make sure you go follow Venku Outdoors on whatever social media platform you're on. Go check out their website, click around, look at it, download the cookbook, share it with your mom, your dad, your grandmother, your best friends, share it with everybody because it's good stuff. But outside of that, make sure you're following Harvesting Nature 2 on social media. And then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button and leave us a review. Tell us what we're doing wrong or, you know, tell us what we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.